And welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. We've got a couple of things on tap for today, beginning with the team that could be the next champion from our state. Also, as we creep up on the one-year anniversary of the beginning of COVID, what was the last major sporting event that you were at? For me, it was exactly a year ago. It was the NBA All-Star Game in Chicago, which, again, was going on exactly 1 year ago. As always, you can hit us up on our socials. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Doug Russell Pod. You also find us on Facebook and YouTube. Just have to search for the Doug Russell Podcast there. For all of that in one easy, convenient place, plus where you can get downloads of all of our shows, including the back catalog for free. Very easy, DougRussellPod.com. Programming note, we will not have a show on Wednesday, but we'll be back on Friday. We've got the newest member of the Wisconsin Badgers joining us on Friday, Miles Burkett. He is the heir apparent to Graham Mertz in Madison, currently the quarterback of the Franklin High School Sabres, just outside of Milwaukee. Really looking forward to that conversation as well. But again, that's coming up on Friday. We will not have a Wednesday show this week. Okay, before the Wisconsin men's hockey team had their winning streak stopped at Michigan over the weekend, Chuck Garbedian and I had a chance to catch up with the voice of Wisconsin hockey, longtime WIBA in Madison sports director Brian Pozick, on the Badgers' remarkable season so far.
At one point in a seven-game stretch, they were 2-5, but this is also a team that's won seven out of their last eight. What's been the turnaround?
Well, they're healthy. You know, during that stretch that you talked about early, they had some COVID issues. They had four players that had to be quarantined for a couple of weeks, and that cost them in games against Arizona State and Ohio State. And not only were they four players, but three of their top centermen, which made a significant difference. Another, Ty Pelton Bice, was out with a concussion. He's their top line center. And then Dylan Holloway was with Hockey Canada in the World Junior Championship, and he missed all but the first two games of the season before returning after Christmas break, and he's been just rolling. He's a first-round pick of the Edmonton Oilers. So they're healthy. They're mature, more mature than last year. Tony Granato, the head coach, had talked them up extensively last season. I mean, the preseason hype, the in-season hype, was like none I'd ever seen surrounding the Wisconsin hockey program. And unfortunately, for a number of those kids who were 18 or 19 at the time, they didn't handle things particularly well. The team didn't play well, more selfish play than unselfish play. And they won 14 games for the third straight season. So this year they've grown up. They're obviously more mature, but also have just a no panic type attitude about them. If things don't go well, they buckle up and come out and make plays. And if they're behind by one or two goals, we've seen them rally to win. If they're down two and still lose, at least the effort was there, which we hadn't seen in the past. So there's a lot of different things that are going into the reason why they're playing as well as they are right now.
Talk a little bit about Granato a little bit, because he's seen a lot, he's done a lot, but certainly all of us have had to adjust with the COVID-19 protocols and just COVID-19 in general, trying to figure out how this is going to work, because I'm sure you lay out a game plan and then suddenly in an instant something changes and you have to be adaptable in that moment.
Yeah, and during that stretch in November and early December, all of a sudden he's playing guys who hadn't played very much and they played relatively well. And what that did is actually kind of galvanize the team. So everybody seems to know their role right now. But Tony, like Greg Gard, Steve Wojciechowski, it doesn't matter who the coach is. It's a different time. There's not that in-person meetings or as many, certainly. They're doing a lot of Zoom. They can't get to the rink some days until noon. Oftentimes the players are there, at 8 or 9 o'clock. That's their life. They can't wait to get to the rink. And they, but now, everything's online school-wise, and their time at, now LeBron Arena, because the Kohl Center is being used exclusively for basketball, their time at the rink is not nearly what it's been. But, they've handled it about as well as you possibly could. And so's the men's basketball team, women's hockey team. Volleyball's off to an excellent start. We saw the hiccups during football, but I think, Tony learned quite a bit from Paul Christ and all the all that transpired at that time. So, you know, Tony, coming into this year, his first year 5 years ago, they won 20 games, almost made the NCAA tournament, and nobody expected that, especially after the Badgers had won 8 games the year before and 4 games the year before that. But the last 3 years, they've only won 14 games. And so there was a lot. The pressure started mounting on Tony Granato and his staff, but now we're seeing the fruits of his labor, certainly of the recruiting labors, and they're playing like we would expect Wisconsin hockey to play.
I want to ask you about a couple of individual players that have been nominated for the Hobey Baker Award coming up in a minute, but You've covered this team for a long time. The last 4 games, their goals differential has been 22-3 in 4 straight wins, 2 against Michigan State, 2 against Minnesota. That's a pretty impressive run. Have you ever seen anything like that from anybody?
Well, it's been a while. You know, the 05-06 team that won the national title at the Bradley Center, that team could put the puck away, but they were so good defensively. Brian Elliott was their goaltender. They gave up, you know, barely a goal and a half per game. You know, they've actually won 9 of their last 11 and allowed only 18 goals in that 11-game span. Their team defense is, you know, we can talk all you want about how they're scoring 4 goals a game and Cole Caulfield and Dylan Holloway and Linus Weisbach and on, but defensively they're so much better than they've been. And a lot of that has to do with their goaltending. They got a graduate transfer from Michigan Tech, Robbie Badoon, who's been solid. He carried the load initially, and then Cameron Rowe, a freshman from Wilmette, Illinois. He's 6-1 and he's second in the country in save percentage. You know, for every 100 shots he faces, he only lets in 5 goals. That's pretty impressive. So, no, this team is stout defensively. This weekend, though, they're going to face a Michigan team, which has been on pause for 3 weeks because of COVID concerns here in Ann Arbor. But they've got the best recruiting class in the country, a bunch of number one draft picks or projected number one draft picks. I mean, the talent on the ice today at 1 o'clock and tomorrow at 4 o'clock is going to be fun to watch. If you like hockey, doesn't matter what level, this will be a fast-paced hockey here the next couple of days.
Well, and that's one of the things. You take a look at all that COVID has brought to every different sport, and you have a situation where Michigan really, how much continuity do they have?
Right.
And you have a Wisconsin team that's coming in red hot. They can't wait to play anybody that you put up on the ice because it's an opportunity for them really to establish themselves, because if you look at the Big Ten standings, the only team on top of them is Minnesota at this point, and not by much. And this is a chance to really separate yourself and you know, regardless of what the situation that Michigan is in, it's a situation that everybody's in. And you can only play who's in front of you. And if these guys haven't played in a couple weeks for whatever reason, that's the schedule. We just go who's in front of us, and you got to take advantage of these opportunities.
Yeah, trust me, Arizona State and Ohio State didn't care that Wisconsin was having COVID issues when they beat them, you know, last semester, right? And so, you know, hey, Michigan's going through their stuff. Wisconsin's not going to feel sorry for them. Michigan actually swept Wisconsin in Madison back in November. There was an overtime game, but a 5-2 loss as well. So, you know, they want some payback. And, you know, hey, you haven't played in 3 weeks? Too bad. We're playing today. What do you got is what we're going to see. I think Michigan, you know, the energy level, because it's a very young team, I think the energy level will be there, but will the conditioning be there? That's part of the question. We saw that with Wisconsin basketball when Louisville came to town in December. Remember, they rescheduled the Big Ten ACC Challenge game, and Louisville hadn't played in, 18, 19 days, maybe longer. And Wisconsin just dominated. I was at that game doing public address, and 3-4 minutes in, the Cardinals were just, you know, they were hot and heavy. They just, you know, they couldn't breathe because they hadn't been up to the pace and the tempo of a collegiate game at that time. So that's kind of what I'm expecting this weekend here, too, is, all right, what type of hockey legs do the Michigan Wolverines have? They've got energy and youth and enthusiasm and all that, but how long is that going to last?
You mentioned the 3 Hobey Baker Award, nominees, Cole Caulfield.
Nominees,
Cole Caulfield, Linus Weisbach, and Dylan Holloway. Wisconsin hasn't had a winner in now over a decade, Blake Jeffrey on back in 2010. What are the odds, in your opinion, that one of these guys can take it?
Well, I think there's a good chance that we'll see Cole Caulfield winning that award. You know, what the percentage is, I couldn't tell you right now. Hobey Baker voting is interesting. A lot of people believe there's an East Coast bias when it comes to college hockey, both on the men's and women's side. But Caulfield, he leads the country in scoring. He's got 17 goals, and he has 17 in his last 16 games after not scoring in his first four games this season. He leads the country in points with 33. He's riding a 12-game point-scoring streak with 13 goals and 25 points in that span. He's got 10 goals in his last seven games. I mean, he is, and defensively, one thing that people maybe overlook is that Caulfield has improved his all around game. Last year, he was a one zone type of player. He was kind of for those that remember Phil Kessel with the Minnesota Gophers, who spurned Wisconsin to go play at Minnesota for 1 year. Phil was really good in the offensive zone, but when he got to the neutral zone, he didn't do too much, and he rarely got into the defensive zone. And Caulfield was kind of that way. He was a cherry picker last year. This year, he's playing a 200-foot game, and I think his teammates have followed suit. He is so much fun to watch. Dylan Holloway may be even better than Caulfield, but Dylan's only played 12 games this season because he was with Hockey Canada in the World Junior Championship, but he's averaging almost 2 points a game. He's got 21 points in his last eight games. He's riding a seven-game multi-point streak. I mean, these are things that you don't often hear in college hockey. And then Linus Weisbach, a senior from Sweden who came back. He could have turned pro, stayed in his homeland, and just moved on with his life, but he wanted to come back and win. Something he hadn't done in his first, 3 years, and he's got 26 points, but he's also been teamed with Caulfield and Holloway, among others, on one of the best power plays in the country too. But if you haven't seen Wisconsin hockey play, they're on the Big Ten Network today at 1 o'clock. Just take a look. I mean, this game's going to be entertaining today, and keep an eye open for number 4, number 8, and number 9, Holloway, Caulfield, and Weisbach. They are a treat.
Watch it on television, but listen to it on the radio.
That's
please.
Right.
Yes, I would like that. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just trying to promote this sport. Just trying to give it a little bit of love.
You're 100%. A good man, Brian Posick. You play a 200-foot game yourself. What is your routine for today now that you're in Michigan?
Well, yeah, I got here last night around, 10:30, 11 o'clock once I found the hotel. And, then I made the mistake of turning on the TV. So that wasn't yep. good. So, but I got up, I do morning drive sports in Madison and had done it for several years for you guys in Milwaukee, too. So I'm up at 3:30 in the morning more times than not. So today I got up at 5:30 Eastern, which is 4:30 Central. So I feel like I've actually gotten more sleep than I need. So I'm just going to hang out here for a little while, get a bite to eat, another cup of coffee, and head to the rink and see what they have in store for us there. So, with all the COVID, I haven't been able to travel very much. I was allowed to go last weekend in Minnesota when Wisconsin spanked the Gophers 4-1 and 8-1. And turnabout is fair play because the Gophers had done that so many times to Wisconsin at the Kohl Center. It was fun watching the Gophers leave the ice with their tails between their legs. I don't know what we're going to get when we get there. So I'll get there 2.5 hours before the game and make sure everything works, and then sit back and just wait for the puck to drop.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about that, Brian, because not many game announcers are traveling this year with their teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, Wayne Larrivee and Larry McCarron, they were at Lambeau Field all season long watching it off of monitors. And I've always thought that hockey is the most difficult sport to call. If you're calling it off a monitor, how much more difficult is that than in person?
Well, it depends on what feed you get from the opponent the team you're covering is playing, right? So earlier this season when they played in Ohio State in December, I was not allowed to travel to Columbus, so we received a feed from Ohio State, and it was crystal clear HD. You could see the entire ice surface. The cameraman was able to follow the puck into each zone. The numbers on the back of the sweaters were bright and easy to read, and you could follow the puck. But then the Penn State series that Wisconsin played in late January, we received a quad screen. So on a 42-inch television, there were four different screens, right? And the program feed was about 18 inches by 18 inches, less than that. I mean, it was small, no HD. And the number, not only were the numbers difficult to see, but it was tough to locate the puck, right? So So as we called those two games, I just know after the Friday game, I had a major headache. And I called our coordinator here in Madison at Badger Sports Properties and said, hey, is there any way that I might be able to travel? Because if we get feeds like this again, I found myself guessing, making some calls, and it was just uncomfortable. So the Minnesota series, this series, they play at Michigan State in a couple of weeks too. They're all drivable. right? So so the university, you contact the university, or will they allow me to, entrance? They did. I'm socially distanced. I've got, you know, glass partitions between me and whoever else is up in the press box, and even in front of me as well for people that might be down below me. And you're just like in a little plastic bubble calling a hockey game. For some like Matt LaPay, he hasn't traveled. You know, he traveled down to Marquette to call Wisconsin Marquette basketball. But otherwise, he and Mike Lucas, they've called all basketball and football games from Camp Randall Stadium. And that's just the way it's being done. But I'm fortunate enough that they allowed me to do this. And you're right, Doug. Calling hockey is hard enough in person. Doing it on a television monitor that, you know, that's the size of a ruler up and down, that was about the most difficult challenge I've ever had.
Well, when you talked about that, it immediately shot back to Bob Costas calling hockey for the first time in his life, and he couldn't pronounce half of the team, so it just was right. Like, Bob Smith is the greatest player. He had the greatest game of his career. It's amazing exactly. That Bob Smith is not in the Hockey Hall of Fame because he must have scored 17 goals that night and assisted on all of them, which is great.
It's
right. Costas could do anything, though. He makes anything sound good.
Right.
You know, if you spill a cup of coffee in your lap, he'd make it sound dramatic and worth watching. Right?
He had pink eye at the Olympics, and it sounded great. Everybody's like, oh, you know, maybe I might want to consider that. You talked about doing PA. What's the best PA gig you've ever had?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I did a lot. I had done women's volleyball for a number of years when I moved to Madison. I had done some Badger hockey, too. Jack Rain was the longtime PA announcer. He passed away in the mid-90s, and I ended up doing PA for hockey. I did basketball at the Fieldhouse. I would say that's probably it. I did basketball for about a year and a half. And on court level, right? And right at center court. And every, you know, I look to my left and you see coaches like Bob Knight and Tom Davis and Gene Cady and Lou Henson and on and on and on. And I mean, that was a treat, actually, just being entertained by the coaches' comments and gyrations. Certainly Bob Knight, that was the most fun. But you know, calling a game or doing PA, or calling a game for that matter, inside the Fieldhouse when it was packed with, you know, 11,000 fans for men's or women's basketball for that matter, that's about as exciting as you could get.
Brian Pozick from mine and Chuck Garbedian's interview with him Saturday morning on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee. All right, moving along. It was 1 year ago that I attended my last major sporting event. And for a while, it was everyone's last major sporting event that you were able to see or experience really in any way before COVID kind of locked down the world. And sometimes I like to look back to where we were in a particular moment in time. In this case, again, really the last time I was able to cover a major event before the coronavirus pandemic shut down the world for a year plus. We're still climbing out of it. Things are getting a little bit better now that people are getting vaccinated. And hopefully, if you had the opportunity to get vaccinated, you have done so. I am not in line yet, but as soon as my turn is called, I can't wait to get that shot in my arm, and I can't wait to begin living again. But in this case, as long as we're talking about the NBA All-Star game from a year ago, where were the Bucks? What was the state of the team at that point? So that Friday night, a year ago, Valentine's Day, I traveled to Chicago to do my radio show from ESPN 1000 studios on State Street. One of my guests that night, the original Buck, Mr. Buck himself, the great John McLaughlin.
Great to talk to you about a Bucks team that I don't know how reminiscent it is of the last time and the only time that the Bucks won a world championship back when you played in 1971. But can you compare the feeling in the city at all as someone who was here then, so intimately involved with the Bucks, as well as today, the excitement that's surrounding this year's Bucks team?
Well, that's a good question, Doug. I think the excitement and the hype is greater today because it is in general with not only social media, but media in general, coverage, both local and national, radio and TV. It's just a much greater, deeper feeling in terms of exposure than we had then, even though we had good national exposure, and primarily probably because of Kareem and then Oscar on that team. But I would say there's more hype today. You know, we played in a smaller building that seated 11,000, not, you know, 17 and 18,000 like the Forum and the Bradley Center. So I think there's a more hype because there's more awareness through all of those systems.
As far as comparisons on the court, I know that you can't compare, for example, Giannis Antetokounmpo, maybe to anyone in NBA history, but he was the signature star, is the signature star of the NBA and of the Milwaukee Bucks in 2020. Back in 1971, you guys had Lew Alcindor, now, of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Do you see any parallels at all between those two guys as men and or players?
Well, I'm going to answer it kind of foolishly, yes and no. I think there were similarities in regards to team defense. You looked at our defense and our offense back in 71, the spread. I saw a comparison on national TV a week ago, and I think it had the us in 71, the Lakers back then, and this Bucks team, the point differential spread between offense and defense. And if you look at defensive and offensive field goals, I think we back then had one of the best in league history, and this Bucks team is right there with it. So I think there's comparisons statistically in regards to defense. There's no comparison in regards to offense. The game has completely changed. The three-point line is in today. It's a three-point league now. It's played outside and once in a while then in. We played inside out because we had the greatest hook shooter of all times and the all-time leading scorer in the NBA in Kareem. So most of our plays were designed around you go to Kareem, you go to Kareem, you go to Kareem. And then we did things around him that might free me up for a kick out, or Oscar could take it, or Bobby Dandridge. But and this Bucks team is built obviously around threes, about Giannis's ability to push and penetrate. And so from an offensive standpoint, there's just no comparison. It's apples and oranges.
I think the easy answer for some would be, well, when the final horn sounded and you won the championship in 1971. But if you can take me back to that season, at what point did you know that this Bucks team, the 70-71 team, was the best team in the NBA?
Training camp.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I remember standing in the parking lot in the Holiday Inn we stayed in Janesville and Milton, where we had training camp in those days, which you'd never see a team today staying in a Holiday Inn or training at Newton College. They would they would gag on that. Like, what? You want us to go where? Standing in the parking lot, because there was a guy with us from day one who was from New York, and he was a writer, and he was doing a book on us. We knew then that it was ours to lose. Once they made the trade for Oscar, and then we went to camp with Kareem and Oscar, and then the rest of us, we knew it was our year, and it was ours to lose. And fortunately, we did not lose it. I think our greatest competitor that year was the Knicks, and unfortunately or fortunately, Baltimore beat them in the semifinals, and they never got to the finals to play us. And we blew Baltimore away. So it was training camp that we were just quite confident.
You look at the resurgence of this Bucks franchise as someone who's been as intimately involved with the organization as you have been in capacity as a player, as a broadcaster, now as, I guess, as fan number one, if you will. As I mentioned, number 14 hangs from the rafters at Fiserv Forum. How gratifying for you has it been to see the resurgence on the court of this team over the last 3 or 4 years?
Doug, this team, the Milwaukee Bucks team, brought me here in 1968 in expansion, and you know, I got to score the first basket and be the first All-Star, and it was player rep those days, and to play with Oscar and Kareem and Bobby and Greg. The Milwaukee Bucks, all through these years, what, 50, pushing 52 now, they're my family. They're my extended family. They're my family's family. My children were born here. They grew up as Bucks people. My wife, all of us. To this day, the Milwaukee Bucks are my family, and it's part of my life. It's part of my identity, but it's not who I am. But it's who who I am in regards to the relationship, the loyalty that the Bucks have shown me through three different ownership groups and individuals and Senator Cole, the loyalty of the fans. Hey, man, this is home, and the Milwaukee Bucks are home. So it means so much to me to have my number hanging up there, to have the respect that everybody's given me and the owners have given me, and the owners are giving me now through the Peter Fagan and how kind he's been to me and how they keep me involved. And so I go to a foxhole for the Milwaukee Bucks, man.
How fun is it for you then to watch this team win at the clip that, I mean, 38 games over 500 at the All-Star break. I mean, in my wildest imagination, I wouldn't have picked 38 games over 500 at the break.
Well, I think John Horst has done a tremendous job with his staff. I mean that. I'm not just shilling here for the players he's put together and brought in. But our coach is – here's how I'll compliment him. I would have loved to have been able to play for him. I think he's a player's coach, and I love him. He's done a great job. Everything that they've done has been good. It's a better team this year than last year. It's deeper. It's more solid. They're good people that lead it, and the players like each other, and they're good guys. And so it's really rewarding for me. As an announcer, I got to cover some really good teams after I retired and then through the 80s with the Don Nelson teams and with Sidney and Cressy and Sigma, Lanier, and all of them. And then I had a lot of really bad teams in the 90s and that we covered on television. And as a color analyst, it's really hard to cover a team that's not very good because everything I'm saying is negative as to what we need to do and we're not doing. So this is so gratifying, even though I'm not on the sideline calling the games. It's so gratifying for me to see what this team has done. You know, we won 66 games. They may very well blow that away. I do want to say this as one thing in defense of our championship team. Our last 10 games that year, we didn't really play to win all of them because Larry Costello started resting us. And that hit me when I covered the 70th win of the Chicago Bulls behind Jordan here in Milwaukee. And it hit me that night when they won their 70th year that we on our championship team, we could have won 72 or 3 easily. We just could have. We didn't try to because in that era, going for records and goals, individual or team, wasn't something you did. So they started resting us. And I think of our last 10 games, I think we lost 5 or 6. Can't remember, but you could look that up, Doug, but it was there. So I know we could have won many more games and just didn't, because today it seems to be more important because goals like that are chased more.
Load management before load management, if you will. The great John McLaughlin joining us here on the Doug Russell Show. Final thing for you, John, before I let you go. As someone who has won a championship here in Milwaukee, if you could give this year's team, as they try collectively to go for their first championship as players on this Bucks team, if you could give them one piece of advice, what would it be?
Do what you've done all year. They have been together. They've been outstanding defensively, and they've found their way offensively. And I don't think facing a team in the playoffs like Toronto last year that walled Giannis off well, I don't think that's going to work this year. So do what you've done all year, and they will. They're built right. They will. Their coach is great. Their assistant coaches are great. They will. And I thought we could win it last year. I believe we will win it this year.
He is John McLaughlin, Mr. Buck. You can watch his number 14 from the rafters hang in perpetuity at Fiserv Forum. John, it was by the way, it was great seeing you at Culver's earlier in the week. That was fun as we ran into each other randomly at lunch. But always great to catch up with you on the radio as well. And I look forward to either seeing you at lunch again sometime soon or hopefully down at a ball game soon as well.
Well, Doug, you're a big spender. You took your wife to Cobra's for lunch. At least I was alone. And and thanks for picking up mine. Yeah. And I go out every day, Doug. And every day people stop me everywhere I go, talk to me about the Bucks, which is very rewarding. But they also bring up to me the Mac Fund, and that just thrills me that that many people are aware of it. So I love the people of Wisconsin. There are people, man. And I'm glad you grabbed me because I didn't see you there that day, but I love talking to you. Take care.
Absolutely. You too, John. Thanks so much for the time. Okay. I appreciate it.
All right.
The great John McLaughlin from a year ago. Also, I wanted to tackle the business end of the Bucks as well. For that, again, this was a year ago at the All-Star break. There were other things planned for 2020 in Wisconsin that never came to fruition. We will touch on those, obviously, in what you're going to hear in the next interview. But still, I had a chance to sit down with Bucks senior VP Alex Lazary in his office in the days leading up to the NBA All-Star game. And I want to go back to the beginning of when you started with the Bucks after the sale of the team from Senator Cole 6 years ago. Could you imagine in your wildest dreams, because I know a lot of people in Milwaukee couldn't, it sounded fantastical, but here this franchise is the class of the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a wild ride. You know, I like to joke that, you know, I think at the press conference, my dad said, you know, within 5 years, we're looking to be a championship contender. You know, that's kind of the way we've always operated, which is like, hey, you know, the only way you can reach big goals is to set big goals. I still don't think anyone in their wildest dreams like truly thought like, oh, within 5 years we'll be a championship contender. We knew we had a good young team. You had a lot of potential, especially with, you know, you had Giannis on the team, Chris was on the team. We knew we were going to get a high draft pick. But I think like where we are right now and, you know, how we got here, it's been an incredible ride. And look, I think it's something that, you know, the city deserves. And, you know, the one thing we always knew this entire time was that Milwaukee had an incredible fan base. And I think that was one of the reasons we really looked at Milwaukee as a place that we wanted to be, because we knew the fan base here was going to be one of the, you know, is one of the strongest and best fan bases in the country. And we knew that if you invest in the team and in the product on the court, the fans will invest 10 times more back in you. And they have. They've been showing up to games where you've, you know, got an incredible sellout streak going on. And, you know, it's made Fiserv Forum probably one of the best home court advantages in the NBA.
What was the secret to it? What was the thing that when you're looking at how to turn around a franchise that, you know, I'm not telling tales out of school here, subpar facilities. You had a team that hadn't been out of the first round of the playoffs since 2001, a fan base that was not what you would call energized. How do you do that beyond putting money into the product?
Giannis? I mean, like, it's, you know, the thing at the end of the day is we're a basketball team. And, you know, we did a lot of stuff, I think, around, you know, look, we invested in the team, you know, we invested in the community, building a new practice facility, state of the art, new arena, state of the art, new logo, you know, tried to create this whole new brand and image, being out in the community as much as possible and, you know, really making the Bucks a fabric of not just Milwaukee, but of Wisconsin. But at the end of the day, the product on the court is what's going to speak. The product on the court, you know, right now we'd sell out the Bradley Center because we're the number one team in the NBA. So at the end of the day, the way you turn around a franchise, quite frankly, is you have to have that superstar and you have to have a team that can build off that. And, you know, like we joke around and say, like, how do you turn around a franchise? Have a Giannis. Yes, having a Giannis is the start. But then you do have to build on it. And what John Horst and the ownership has been able to do to put a team around Giannis. You know, there are a ton of guys in the NBA who are superstars who haven't been able to get to that next level, who haven't been able to, you know, I think, and again, we haven't won anything, but to even just have the success that we've had, there are a ton of guys who haven't, you know, had that. And, you know, the fact that, you know, John has been able to put a team around you know, Giannis with Chris Middleton, Bledsoe, and taking some big risks and, you know, trading for Eric Bledsoe, bringing in Brooke Lopez and, you know, the bench unit that we have with George Hill and, you know, having a team like that, and then bringing in Bud to be, you know, coach of the year in his first year. And, you know, after you look at all of that and, you know, it all starts with, I think, having a Giannis. But then you have to put the pieces around him and you have to invest in the organization. And I think that's something that we've taken, you know, very personally and very seriously.
One of the things that your dad said shortly after buying the team is that he was shocked that he couldn't find Bucks gear in the community. And I didn't even think about it at the time, but he was right. There wasn't, you couldn't go to a Target or a Walmart or a Kohl's or name the store. It doesn't matter. You couldn't really find Bucks gear. To me, kind of as a lifelong resident of Milwaukee, looking from above, it kind of looks to me as though that's been the biggest change, is that fans are now proud to wear Bucks gear. That's been the seismic shift for me over the last 6 years.
Yeah, it's amazing what winning can do. But I think also I think that the new brand has really injected a new life into the team. And I think what, you know, me, Pete Fagan, ownership have constantly tried to preach is being a Bucks fan is being a fan of Milwaukee. It's being a fan of Wisconsin. And there's a pride and a pride in being a fan of the Bucks. And that's what we've kind of tried to show and to preach. And one of the things that we wanted to make sure was like, yeah, we want you to be able to buy Bucks gear anywhere and wear it proudly. And I think we really knew we were onto something when you'd go to a Packer game and you'd see people in Bucks gear. And, you know, I don't know when, you know, you could imagine that happening, you know, that Bucks gear is being worn at Marquette games, Brewer games, Packer games. Like, that's something that I think is showing that, like, the Bucks are one of the hottest things and hottest brands in Wisconsin. And I think what's even cooler than that is you now go to games at Madison Square Garden, you go to games in Chicago or LA, and people are wearing Bucks gear. And it, you know, we played in Paris, and it was, you know, you look at when we were there, you know, when we were in London 5 years ago, that was a majority, you know, Knicks crowd. Now we're going to Paris 5 years later, and it's a majority Bucks crowd. And I think, you know, that's kind of, you know, you just want to look at, you know, where the team was 5 years ago and where the team is today. You can kind of just look at those two international games and really see that our fandom has just grown. And people are, I think, starting to see the Bucks as one of the cool, hip teams. And look, I think what it, you know, part of our promise for building the new arena and keeping the Bucks here was what it was going to do for the city and state. And I think you're now starting to see Milwaukee on the rise and Milwaukee as, you know, this top tier city in the country that people are starting to pay attention to.
Yeah, that is one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, is the global reach of the NBA. Yes, the Bucks. Yes, Giannis. But when you go to London, when you go to Paris, when you take an off season trip to wherever in the world and you see the global reach of this brand, the NBA brand, I don't know that people in Wisconsin necessarily think beyond the Wisconsin borders at times, but this is, and has been for a number of years, really a global entity that when you think of Milwaukee, whether you're in Shanghai or Hong Kong or Paris, right now the first thing you think of is the Milwaukee Bucks.
It's one of the more remarkable things that now when you do go around the country or even around the world, one of the things that people realize, and when they say, when they see, you know, a hat that says Milwaukee on it, but they know where Milwaukee is and they know about Milwaukee. And that's something that's really cool. You know, it's not just this city that is, you know, like when you say they see Milwaukee Bucks, they're like, oh, where's that? People know Milwaukee, and they, you know, and that's the global reach that the team, I think, has been able to accomplish. And having an international superstar like Giannis has been able to do is, and being able to play overseas and being willing to take, you know, that risk in season and go play overseas to help build that brand, because what it does is it makes sure that people know Milwaukee and that they know that it's a place that, you know, is a top tier place in this country. And it's something that I think, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, they might have just known Milwaukee for, you know, cheese heads or beer and cheese. But I think now they're started, people are starting to come here, flock here, and see Milwaukee as, you know, this 21st century, you know, great place to live, work, and play. And that's also something that Fiserv Forum has done. It's really put Milwaukee on the international map as a place for concerts and a place for people to want to come and be a part of.
Conventions as well. You've got one of those coming this summer.
Yeah, we do. We have a pretty big convention.
You've been a little bit
involved in that one. Yeah. We have a pretty big convention coming in. And again, that's something that Fiserv Forum has been able to accomplish, which is, you know, having this state-of-the-art new facility that is probably the best one in the country. You know, not only are we getting the best concerts, you know, you've got Justin Timberlake coming in for the first time ever. You've got Elton John coming through, Chance the Rapper, Kevin Hart, you know, the Eagles, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, like you name it, every act is coming here. And Milwaukee is becoming a can't miss stop on all those tours. And that's something that's just really exciting. And with that has come also the biggest event that has ever happened in Milwaukee's history, which is going to be the Democratic National Convention. And all of this stuff coming together, I think, all at the same time, you know, the Bucks doing really well, Fiserv Forum becoming an international top five international arena, and the convention coming here has kind of put this moment on Milwaukee that, you know, is thrusting us into the spotlight, and hopefully we're able to take advantage of it and make Milwaukee, you know, a bigger and better city than, you know, even its southern neighbor in Chicago.
We've talked about international. We've talked about Giannis a lot. But what do people not realize about Giannis Antetokounmpo? You've watched him grow over the last 6 years.
You know, the thing is, when it comes to Giannis, what you see is who he is. And, you know, I don't think there is a lot of things that people don't know about him, because he's a pretty open and transparent person. And, you know, because, like, the qualities that I think everyone loves about him is it's all real. You know, he is this really humble person who has got this big heart and kind of like joyous, you know, kid-friendly persona, who also, you know, knows that he wants to be the best and wants to be the best player to have ever played basketball. And so, you know, I think what's really refreshing about Giannis, and why I think he's like the perfect embodiment of what the NBA is supposed to represent and a perfect face for the league, is because he's someone who works incredibly hard, is humble, and wants to win. And isn't just, you know, he wants to win not only every game in the regular season, but every game in the playoffs and every championship, and have, you know, MVPs and all of that. And so, you know, I think that's what's really cool. You know, he's, you know, someone who just, I know, over the last 5 years, you've kind of seen him mature, you know, grow into himself as a leader, not just as a basketball player, but also as a leader on and off the court. And now he's about to grow into himself as a father. And, you know, I can't wait to see what that next chapter of his life looks like. You know, we've got some work left to do this year, but, you know, with Giannis, it's just been, you know, being able to kind of grow with him over the last 5 years has really been incredible to watch.
So no plans yet to draft Liam for the class of 2030 or something?
I don't want to get hit with any tampering charges, so I'll leave that one out. But I have no doubt that Liam is going to be a future bucket getter. That is something I think we can all guarantee.
Now, speaking of families and speaking about bucket getters, tonight your dad's playing again in the Celebrity All-Star game.
Five-time All-Star
in the family. Break down Mark Lazary's game for us.
Mark Lazary, you know, he's got a great jump shot, good spot-up shooter. And then, you know, I think what you don't realize is he's got kind of that old man dad strength. And I've been a victim of that old man dad strength too many times trying to guard him in the post.
Sharp elbows?
He's also a ruthless competitor. And a funny story that I have is, growing up, we would play where if I shot, I think, behind like the free throw line, he couldn't block me. And so I was getting good enough where I had never beaten him up until this point, and I was getting good enough where like I could just stand at that free throw line and hit jumper after jumper. And he wasn't also allowed to post me up because I was, you know, at this point, I think I was just too small and young. So I think I was up like game point. I think it was like 10-7. And I go to take my foul line jump shot, and he blocks it. And I was like, Dad, what are you doing? You can't block this shot. And he was like, yeah, I don't care. He was like, it's game point. And then he posted me up and took just like four layups and won the game. And I was like, Dad, that's cheating. He was like, grow up. He was like, there you go. He was like, that was the lesson. And that's also when I learned that my dad is a ruthless competitor. So I don't like to say he cheated because technically I guess he didn't. But that's my dad. He wants to win and loves to win and hates losing. And I think that's why him and Giannis get along so well, because they'll both do anything that it takes to win.
Final thing before we move on, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, and I don't know what you can say about it or not, but I know that it's been out there that Fiserv Forum and the Bucks have applied for a future All-Star game. Is there any movement on that? Do you have any news about that?
No news. I think for us, look, we want to bring an All-Star game to Milwaukee because Milwaukee deserves an All-Star game. You know, when you think about what the game is supposed to represent and what it's supposed to show, is there a better NBA city than Milwaukee? I mean, the fans are some of the best fans in the league. It's got this global superstar as the face of its franchise. It's got second and what should be a third all-star, one of the top teams in the NBA, best in the last two regular seasons. You kind of look at it and you'd say, like, it's got this brand new arena. And you look at it and you'd say, and an ownership that's dedicated to winning. And you'd say, like, okay, isn't this exactly what we'd want in showcasing an all-star game in, you know, an incredible NBA city? So I think that's the pitch that we're trying to make, is that, like, you want to come here to show, because the all-star game is about showcasing the NBA, and what better place to showcase all that the NBA is about than right here in Milwaukee, a perfect embodiment of what the NBA is supposed to represent. And look, I think having the national convention here should show the NBA that Milwaukee can not only handle an all-star game, but will throw one of the best all-star games that the NBA has ever had. So, you know, I think we're still waiting to hear what the, I can't remember what the next year is. And, you know, I think our hope is that, again, there's no better city to host a game. You know, maybe if my dad wins all-star, celebrity all-star MVP, that'll push the envelope a little bit.
We will look forward to that. Alex Lazary, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Bucks Senior Vice President Alex Lazary 1 year ago leading up to the NBA All-Star Game. All right, that's it for today. As always, you can hit us up on our socials. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter, the same username. It is at Doug Russell Pod. You can also search for us on Facebook and YouTube. And for all of that, including free downloads of all of our shows, including the back catalog, we're now over 60 shows so far that we've done here on the Doug Russell Podcast. You can find us very simply, DougRussellPod.com. Again, a programming note, we will not have a show on Wednesday, but we will be back on Friday with the newest member of the Wisconsin Badgers, quarterback Miles Burkett. Still has one more season to go as the quarterback of the Franklin Sabres, but Miles Burkett will join us coming up on Friday, the heir apparent, if you will, to Graham Mertz in Madison. Really looking forward to that conversation. Until then, have a great week. We'll talk to you on Friday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.